This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. His name is Grant Saunier. He's been a frequent guest on this program. He's going to join us to talk about the QMJHL draft prospects, the draft eligible players from the Quebec Junior Major Junior Hockey League as we get closer and closer to the end of the month in Philadelphia where the NHL draft will take place. Of course, we will be in Philly live on site bringing you all the latest news from the NHL draft. Also joining us on the show this morning, Craig Button, TSN draft expert, is going to join us to talk about the NHL draft. And Mike Colligan, from he covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. The Penguins obviously made a number of changes yesterday. He's going to join us to talk about those changes. That, along with everything to do with the Stanley Cup Finals, Game 1, which happened on Wednesday, Game 2, which happens tonight, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Richie, good morning to you. Looks like you're in for a rough start this morning based on the lack of coffee and the lack of an operational computer at the moment.
Yeah, no, the computer's coming around. I was running behind, though, and I went to grab a coffee. Didn't think I'd have time. And then Ezzy was apparently getting a coffee. I sent him a little request, and he comes in. No coffee.
Ezzy, defend yourself.
Sorry, I'm a little late coming in today. No, I actually didn't get the text from Richie, so if I would have seen it, I would have got you. You're my boy, Richie. Of course, I would have got you a coffee. I didn't see it. There had to have been at least 20 people in line at Tim Hortons today. It's unbelievable. It doesn't matter what time of the day it is. There seems to be 20 people in line. So I apologize, Richie.
Okay, I'm just going to drink your coffee.
I was going to say, the really courteous thing to do at this point in time, if you really want to be a mensch, Ezzy, is to just give your coffee to Richard and call it even at that point in time.
How about we share it?
Two straws, like Lady and the Tramp, between the two of you? Two straws into your coffee? I think that'd be a very romantic way to kick off the show. Anyways, let's get started by talking about Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Finals. It happened on Wednesday night between the Los Angeles Kings and the New York Rangers, a game that the Kings won by a 3-2 margin, scoring in overtime Justin Williams, Mr. Game 7. He scores in Game 1 to become, I guess, Mr. Game 1 for this week's trope, at the very least. A game that, to my mind, you know, the Rangers, they had that 2-0 first period lead. Not really surprised that they came out as the stronger of the two teams, given that LA was coming off the emotional high of that tremendous Chicago series. The Rangers had the 2-0 lead. They had a somewhat firm grasp, as much of a firm grasp as there's been in these playoffs, and they couldn't make it hold up, losing 3-2 in a game that I think that they really did need to have at that point in time.
Yeah, you know, Drew, I didn't see all the game. I was playing ball this week, so I only saw the latter half of the game. But do they have to have it? I mean, yes and no. Yeah, if you look at it from before the game, do they have to have Game 1? No, they have to have one of the first two games. If you look at it after Game 1, you say 2-0 lead. You know, in any NHL game, although these leads haven't necessarily held up in the playoffs this year, should serve you well. So I don't think the Rangers are going to get too down on themselves in terms of blowing the lead. I think they're going to be more concerned about the fact that they hardly touched the puck in the latter part of the game.
Sure.
And that's after you get the feel for the team. You know, it's kind of akin to a pitcher going through the lineup for the second time after having not really seen the team. You get a better look at what they have. You have an idea of what they're going to bring. And if they start handling you pretty well, then that's going to be trouble. So that's where I'd be concerned. I thought the Rangers did an okay job, but not a good enough job at utilizing their speed. I mean, obviously, Carl Hagelin was causing a lot of problems, and Jets fans will know him from his hat trick here later in the season. But they need to be able to use more of their speed. They need to be able to have guys like Kreider more effective. All right? I mean, because we know the Rangers are not going to win the up-the-middle battle. They're just not. It's not even close. Stepan, Richards, they don't match up against Kopitar and Carter. So we know that they're going to give up on that matchup. Their wingers have to be better. And their wingers have to be able to utilize their speed and create opportunities and pressure. You know, Regeer's in tonight, apparently. Pressure the lack of speed on the back end of the Kings, Ezzy.
Yeah, and you nailed it, Richie, that the Kings are going to win the up-the-middle battle, and that's something that you could tell that they were working on at practice this week. And the Kings came out sloppy, guys. In that first period, they didn't look good. They were having trouble getting out of their own zone. Drew Doughty obviously had the miscue, and then he made up for it, tying the game up later. But, you know, these two teams are evenly matched, and I don't think any of us expected this series to be short. Some people, I guess, might have picked one of these teams to maybe win in five. I don't think I saw any prognosticator, definitely not on this station, that was picking a sweep. I think the common thread was six or seven games in this series, and these two teams are evenly matched. And, you know, you nailed it, Richie, as far as this Kings team, they make you pay. And this team hits, and they're physical, and they've done that, and it's amazing that they're still doing it in after going through three game sevens, and they led the hit parade again. Yeah. And, you know, Justin Williams, you know, drew off the top mention that he's Mr. Game One, Mr. Game Seven. His pass to Drew Doughty didn't look like anything special, but he's such a smart player. He's been in this situation so many times, been in so many Stanley Cup finals and Stanley Cup playoffs in general. And these are the clutch players that come through. Jeff Carter comes through late in the first period and makes a great pass below the boards to Kyle Clifford, who in front of the net battles his way past the Rangers defenseman. I think it was Dan Girardi. No, it was Mark Stahl actually on the ice. And, you know, this team, they find a way to come back. And it seems like it's a broken record here, but this team really, even though they're down 2-0, I mean, that Carl Hagelin goal, that can be a killer. You're at home, you go down 2-0, shorthanded goal, that could have absolutely killed them. And what did they do? They got a late first period goal, came back, kept battling, and I think they really found their game after that. And Jonathan Quick was not really at fault on either of the goals. And I think that, you know, this series is going to be that close. The difference is going to be special teams and coming down to late goals and overtime goals. There's so little separating these two teams. You could say that the Kings have more depth up the middle, Richie, and overall depth at forward. You can make a strong argument that the Rangers are equal to the Kings on defense and in goal. Yeah, certainly in goal they have the edge. So this group of Rangers defensemen, Drew, that's getting John Moore back after the suspension. Richie mentioned that Robin Regier is coming back. It's not really clear who's coming out. Maybe it's Matt Green, who's I think has actually been really good for the Kings. Slower guy, but, you know, he's been doing a good job on the bottom pair. But, you know, there isn't a lot separating these teams. Richie makes a really good point, though. The Kings have shown that you can't infiltrate the neutral zone. And the Rangers are a team that has done that against other teams, the Montreal Canadiens being one of them. Didn't do it so much against the Pittsburgh Penguins in the second round. But the LA Kings just don't give you a lot of space.
Yeah.
The defensemen don't give you a lot of space. The forwards are talented defensively. You're talking Brown. You're talking Andrei Kopitar, who we've said time and time again, he's Pavel Datsyuk light. He's not quite as good as Pavel Datsyuk.
Third best player in the NHL, according to Wayne Gretzky. Yeah, I mean,
well, if Wayne Gretzky says that, it means a lot more than Ezra Ginsberg saying that.
Yeah.
So listen to what Wayne says.
If Ezra Gretzky was to say it, then it really would make a lot of difference.
No, and Andrei Kopitar wasn't even a huge factor offensively in that first game. He was great defensively. He does what he does, wins faceoffs, mm-hmm. and leads the team.
So big.
But
so strong on the puck. So strong on the puck defensively and offensively.
He's all over the ice, Richie. Yeah. All over the ice. And the Kings have a lot of players that are all over the ice like that. And I thought it was really interesting, Daryl Sutter, talking about Jeff Carter. I mean, Jeff Carter, I think he's a serious Conn Smythe candidate at this point. Serious. I think you're talking about two or three guys. You got to throw other names in there. I think
like
Doughty,
Quick's not in there. Quick is, I
don't
played
this
well
time
enough.
Not yeah. Quick. I don't think so. I think he's been good in game sevens and he's had his little runs, but his numbers are definitely nowhere near where they were 2 years ago.
I agree. As you say, Carter. You say Kopitar, Doughty.
I think that's
you're
the conversation.
Toss Williams in there because it's going to be those three. I think.
Yeah. I would say Carter. Doughty certainly is. I mean, Doughty's been otherworldly. I mean, he had a bad start to that game.
But, you know, Drew, when you play 30 minutes a game, A, there's going to be more time to make mistakes, and B, you're going to get tired and have times where you don't play as well.
Yeah.
But he's the key to that team for so many reasons, and never mind transition and the power play and the puck movement through the neutral zone and all those things that he provides. But he's really your best. Like, he's so much. His talent is so unique. Not only to the NHL, but to the Kings especially. Like, they can build a tough and rumble defense, you know, like Rough and Tumble, excuse me, with Matt Green, as you mentioned.
I thought you said Rough and Tumble.
Yeah. Matt Green, Regier, you know, he's coming in, and you look at Willie Mitchell. I mean, these guys are smart defensemen. They're tough, but they're not that fast. And you couldn't have guys like that if you don't have talented players like Doughty and then Voinov at a lesser extent. You need to be able to complement the players. And that's what I like. Daryl Sutter has adjusted with the times, but has also stayed true to what he believes in. I think he's adjusted to the times and the way he treats players.
Yep.
And the way he coaches and the style he coaches. But he's still stuck to what he believes in terms of the pairings.
Yep.
Offensive, defensive defenseman. Size. Toughness. Competitiveness. Like, he is, you know, he had that stint as a bad GM. We have to say he was not a good general manager. But his coaching in, I mean, I'm not going to go as far back as Chicago. I didn't obviously see it and know much about that tenure. But his tenure in San Jose, and then in Calgary, and then in Los Angeles. I think Mike Babcock is the best coach in the National Hockey League, but I think Daryl Sutter is the second best coach in the National Hockey League.
And that's saying a lot, and I don't think you're going to get a lot of arguments when it comes to either of those guys, and their track record speaks for it. Daryl Sutter's got a Stanley Cup ring already. Mm-hmm. He took the Flames, and we were there in Calgary back in 2004. That was a Flames team that, sure, they had a great goaltender in Jerome Iginla, but you had a lot of grinders.
That's right.
You had Dave Lowry and Marty Jelena and all these guys. Mike Commodore, you guys remember that team, and he got the best out of them. I think a point that's worth making here, and this goes to Richie's point about Daryl Sutter, in that game, we had that 70s line, Jeff Carter, Tyler Toffoli, Tanner Pearson. Daryl Sutter actually moved Carter down to the fourth line, moved Jarrett Stoll up to that line because it was struggling offensively, and what ended up happening, Kyle Clifford got that goal.
He's underrated, by the way.
He's a good player.
And you know what? He can skate pretty well. He's a pretty good skater for that line, and you talk about adding Pearson, who's really improved his skating and obviously Carter up the middle, and a couple of these guys, they can all, like Gabrick, we talked about it at the trade deadline. This team had everything except for speed, really, and then they added speed and scoring. How can you go wrong with that?
And that goes back to kind of heading into the playoffs, what we were talking about with the LA Kings, a team that came into Winnipeg and dominated the Jets like no other team, with the exception of maybe the Chicago Blackhawks.
Chicago dominated them more, but yes.
The Kings looked excellent, and when you see them up close, it's a little bit different than on TV. For anybody that was at that game late in the season, the Jets had so much trouble even getting the puck at times. This team is excellent, and they really have very few flaws, and you could argue that this team is stronger than the 2012 team. And it's tough to make that argument in the sense that they've had to go through all these game sevens.
Yeah, they did. And they, you know, as I agree with you in terms of the team as a whole, but if you one of the main arguments against that is, look how easily they won the last cup.
Yeah. And it goes back to the way Jonathan Quick was playing. Yes, Jonathan Quick isn't playing at that level. He's playing well enough for the Kings right now. He's giving them a chance to win. He's making good saves. Let's not get that confused. But he's just not stealing games like he was. And
they haven't needed him to steal games,
though.
That's right.
Because
they can score. You're right. They can score. And they've showed, you know, they showed them that they can outscore the Blackhawks. They showed that.
Score all year.
Yeah.
And you have to give Dean Lombardi, Ron Blake credit for getting Gabrick for not a lot.
Yeah.
And you take the 12 goals out of the lineup that Gabrick has.
Oh, they're not there.
They're not there.
Yeah.
And I certainly didn't think Gabrick would have this type of impact. I thought he would be a contributor offensively, but to be up there and leading the playoffs in goals is incredible.
And this wasn't an instant chemistry. If you remember, Gabrick's first game with the Kings was in Winnipeg.
Right.
And it takes a while to develop a chemistry. Their power play was a little bit off. Him and Kopitar didn't have great chemistry, but chemistry isn't built in a day. And the patience, again, exuded by Daryl Sutter, I think, is a factor in all of this.
They've been doing good things, and they'll try and keep it going tonight. Game 2, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. When we come back, we will preview that game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
We're not going to beat this team if we do not all bring our A game. It is that strong of an opponent that we're playing against. We had Hank that brought his A game last night. We had a couple of guys, I don't want to name who I think brought their A game, but our B game won't do it.
That was New York Rangers head coach Alain Vigneault talking about his team's performance after Game 1, heading into tonight's Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final between the New York Rangers and the Los Angeles Kings. Richie?
Well, Vigneault is very... He's all about motivation, but such a different motivation. Kind of, you know, he lets his if you read a lot about Alain Vigneault, he lets the team, lets the leaders kind of run the locker room, and it certainly worked in Vancouver for a long period. But after a while, you know, he faded away, like many coaches do. Mm-hmm. And here he's kind of doing the same, but he likes to use the media to call out players, you know, not necessarily specific players, but and you heard it there. And I like that he's a motivator that way. And he's, you know, he'll change his tune, though, like every other coach. We need to play our A game, and then if they lose, well, you know, if they lose and play their A game, he's not going to acknowledge that.
Right.
So, I mean, there are certain things. He's a calm coach, though, and I think in these circumstances, that's a benefit because it's a bit of a whirlwind. I mean, you know, the Rangers haven't been back to the Cup in 20 years, but in reality, who on this team, aside from St. Louis and Richards, is an accomplished Stanley Cup winner? So I don't think anybody off the top of my head. So
no, absolutely nobody.
So when you look at it that way, he needs to be calm. And in L.A., it's...
Did Dominic Moore have a Cup in 2004?
No, I don't believe so.
Yeah, so...
He's playing a lot of teams, too.
You got two Cups on this team.
Yeah, so you look at it, you look at L.A., basically the entire team has Cup. You know, you look at the additions, okay, sure. But even Gabrick went to the conference finals with the Rangers a couple of years ago, went to the conference finals with Minnie. So he has experience. All the guys have experience on it. So he's got to be calm. And I think the days off, though, probably hurt the Rangers.
Yes.
Because you want to play. And this team, I think LA has played a harder, they played one extra game, one more game than the Rangers have. Mm-hmm. But it's been a harder game they've played. And I also think the Kings, they're at home, they can relax, they know what's coming, they've been here before. The Rangers are sitting at home, or sitting in the hotel, thinking about it. I know they're in LA and all that, but they're not partying. I would assume they're not partying, most of them. And they're thinking, and they're thinking, oh, what did I do? What did I do? Dan Girardi, I can't believe I turned that puck over.
Gets to stew on that for 2 days.
So I think that's a benefit to the Kings right now.
I agree with you, Richie. And I think when you talk about Alain Vigneault's comments, which we played at the top of the segment there coming in out of the break, and he's talking about the A game and the B game, you know, they didn't play very well in game one. And I thought they were obviously good in the first period. But as we know, one period does not make isn't the winning formula for a victory in the NHL, especially the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I think this team, and this goes back to our preview last week, we didn't know who was going to be in the finals, if it was going to be Chicago or LA, and I was already picking the winner of that series to eventually win the Cup. And I don't think that that's anything out of the ordinary. I think a lot of people
Karnak the Magnificent.
Yeah, exactly.
Over here.
No, well, I mean, that series, for all intents and purposes, really was a Stanley Cup final quality series between two teams, the two best teams over the last 5 years.
Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail suggested, I think it's a great idea, and I don't know if we've talked about this on the show before with him. We haven't with him, I know that. That when you get down to the Final Four, he thinks there should be a crossover. So at the end of the day, you get the two best teams in the final.
He's also an advocate of what my idea was going back to when they had the old playoffs alignment, where the first place team, the conference winner, should be able to choose who they play in the first round.
Yeah, that, I mean, now, I mean, I don't think that, but the conference winner wouldn't want to do that. That's the problem.
It's too rad. I mean, I like his idea, but I think it's too rad.
But how would a crossover be if the Kings and Hawks was a final? Sure. I'm not saying this isn't a good final. Don't get me wrong.
I think that would definitely be exciting for fans. I don't know if the GMs and owners would like it.
No, they would never do it.
Back to your point, Richie. I've picked against the Rangers in every series, including Philly, including Pittsburgh, including Montreal. And this team is still not getting offensive production from the primary scorers. And you still see, like Rick Nash is not a game breaker.
Same player. I mean,
it's they don't have game breakers on this. They have the New York Rangers are a very good team, and they deserve to be in the Stanley Cup Finals. I'm not taking anything away from them.
You mean at forward, they don't have a game breaker. I mean, Ryan McDonough is a game breaker
on defense. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. This team is still very much built from the net out, and they deserve all the credit in the world for how well they've played defensively. And that's not just Ryan McDonough and Dan Girardi. That's Mark Stahl. That's Anton Strålman. That's Kevin Klein. John Moore is coming back, and Rafael Diaz is a pretty good defenseman.
That is an upgrade, though.
It's an upgrade.
I think you're right about that, Ezzy.
It's an upgrade.
Size and speed wise,
if their big boys don't get going here. Yeah. You know, this isn't a series.
But let's talk about John Moore for 1 second.
Sure.
You're adding a bigger guy who can really skate against a team with a bunch of big guys on the wings.
Yep.
That's helpful.
Yep.
Diaz is not going to be the guy who competes with these guys and is tough enough to do that. So that's an upgrade. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's not Ryan McDonough anywhere close to him, but it's an upgrade.
And his stats are a little bit misleading. He's only got one assist. But, no, he's an excellent defenseman acquired from the Columbus Blue Jackets. And you forget about
him. The whole team is acquired by
Columbus. Yeah, exactly. The whole team is acquired by the Blue Jackets. You're right, Richie.
Same with the Kings, though, now, with Gaborik and Carter. You know, they certainly have their...
If you're a Columbus fan, though, you got to feel...
Yeah.
The Rangers players who went to Columbus... Columbus players went to the Rangers, I think, put in a different effort.
Yeah.
Or were more well-liked than the Carter and Gaborik.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know, but I don't want to speak to Gaborik's effort. And he had injuries and such. But Carter's effort was different story.
Jeff Carter got his way out of Columbus very
quickly. I should also say quickly, our buddy Ken Weeb has corrected me and said that Dan Carcillo won the cup with the Hawks.
That's a good point.
Last year, right?
And he didn't play much, and I believe there was an issue with he got the cup ring late.
And he's not going to play much this series either.
Did he not play? I think he got his cup ring very late.
Carcillo was in L.A. earlier this year, wasn't he?
I believe so. Didn't he
play with Richards? I saw him play in L.A.
I thought he went from Chicago to L.A.
He did go to L.A.
earlier this year.
And, of course, he was with Jeff Carter and Mike Richards back in Philly.
And that's right. And now he's got a nice seat in the suspension box, and then it'll be the press box after that.
Well,
I don't think he's an upgrade on anybody in their lineup right now. Having said that, considering his physicality and his recklessness, maybe they take a chance. I actually thought... I don't like Dan Carcillo at all, and I'm not sure who they're pulling out of the lineup because I think everybody in the lineup, the 12 guys they have, are better than him. But he actually, I thought, played well before he got suspended.
His unique level of insanity might be helpful in this series.
You know, if you're looking for the keys to the game, and again, I think heading into this game, you know, everyone's always asking me, who's going to win? Are the Kings going to go up 2-0? And by everyone, I mean my dad.
Yeah.
These two teams are very evenly matched, okay? But if you're talking for me, what are the keys to this series? Not only just tonight's game.
Yeah,
is the line of Derek Stepan, Chris Kreider, and Rick Nash has to get going, and the goal scorers, the guys that are paid money to score goals, and Carl Hagelin, he can't score every single goal for this team.
Short-handed.
He's got 7 goals. Exactly, they have to step up. Marty St. Louis, he's been excellent, but he has to be an offensive force. If that doesn't happen, this is going to be a short series.
Look at who they're playing. You know, you look at the line of Brassard, Pouliot, and Zuccarello, and there's certainly a skill level in all those guys, and they've had their... I like Zuccarello, actually, the best of the bunch. But you look at those guys, and you say, okay, who are they best suited to play? Well, they're best suited to play against a Pittsburgh team that kind of, you know, lacks...
Not a big, tough defensively, defensive team.
Not big defensive, big and tough, and if their Scuderi or Pick guys aren't great skaters anymore, if they never really were, but Montreal... Not that physical, we'll skate, let's play some hockey. And then you look at Philly, a little different. Philly's a little bit different, a little tougher, but not that fast. This is not a matchup. Like, Matt Zuccarello in the corner against Robin Regier, sure, he'll use his quickness, but he's going to get killed. And Pouliot, I mean, is he going to go into the tough areas to make the plays? The fancy-schmancy plays once in a while that work, is that going to work against L.A.? Likely not.
The Rangers are to me, and this speaks to, you mentioned Rick Nash earlier, to me the Rangers are a team, Rick Nash especially, does 4/5 of what he needs to do to get a goal, but he can never actually get that last fifth that he's missing to put the puck in the net. You know, he comes in off the wing, and he's coming in with speed and his great size, and he likes to come in with his back to the play to sort of shield the puck. And then he just does nothing with it at that point in time. It's just a turnover, or it's a harmless play.
But is he going to the net?
Rick Nash is
not able to get past the faceoff dots.
He's a finesse player.
He's able to.
Well, he's not.
He has the ability to drive the net, and that's what against the LA Kings, and we've said this now since the playoffs started and going back to the regular season here, The LA Kings are, if not the best defensive team, one of the best defensive teams that don't give you a lot of space, and they pound you into the boards, and they keep everything on the outside. You have to drive the net. You have to get dirty goals. That's what the Chicago Blackhawks were doing. You remember Andrew Shaw and Ben Smith. They were getting goals that weren't pretty goals. You get the goals however you have to.
Sure.
So, you know, Robin Regier coming back. Sorry, Rangers fans, but things aren't going to get easier for you tonight. And some of these players that get paid the big bucks are going to have to start scoring.
You're right, Ezzy. The game two tonight, you'll hear it live here on TSN 1290. Puck drop at 6 p.m. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Grant Saunier. He's the general manager of the Charlottetown Islanders of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. We start our draft preview coverage by talking about the draft-eligible prospects from the queue. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show the general manager of the Charlottetown Islanders of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, Grant Saunier. Grant, good morning, and thanks very much for doing this.
Good morning, guys. Happy to do it.
Thanks very much, Grant. Before we get into the draft-eligible players from the queue, because that's the primary reason we're having you on, to talk about those players and preview those players' chances at the upcoming NHL draft, how was your first year with the Islanders as general manager?
Well, it was quite a transition, actually. We started off with new ownerships, new logos, new everything, really, and we got out of the gate incredibly well. I think we were 10-2-1, and somebody rated us fourth in the country. I made the joke they missed the zero on the back end, and we started to show our colors. We actually traded away some really good players, but there was a method to the madness, and we acquired a lot of real good pieces here moving forward, and we're pretty excited about our future. Fans were unbelievable. We like, not very often do you lose twice as many games and you increase your attendance by 50% and the media likes you. That doesn't happen very often in sports, so we're pretty fortunate, and we're really looking forward to year two.
And Grant, obviously the Islanders have a couple of draft-eligible players, and we'll get to those guys as we go through the list of QMJHL prospects for the upcoming NHL draft. First player we wanted to ask you about is sort of the consensus top player from the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League this year. That's from the Halifax Mooseheads, Nikolai Ehlers. Everyone expects him to be sort of a top 10 pick upcoming in Philadelphia. You know, to your mind, you obviously have seen him more than we have. You know, what was his best attribute as a forward?
Well, I concur with the top 10, by the way. He's a really, really dynamic player, elite skater, high-end skill. And I think what people may underestimate, and you don't see it, or you see it when you watch him, the more you watch him, this kid's got big-time compete. What makes him different than other people, I'm sure NHL teams are going to be excited about, is the fact that he's still only 170 pounds. This kid's going to get a lot stronger. He's going to get a lot quicker, and he's already an elite skater in my mind. He had a terrific year. He really lessened the blow of losing Nathan MacKinnon there in Halifax. He was a wonderful player this year.
Grant, the next guy that we wanted to ask you about is Ivan Barbashev. He's a center for the Moncton Wildcats. He was the number one pick by the Wildcats back in the 2012 CHL import draft. Where do you have him pegged at, and what can you tell us about him as a player?
Well, there's a lot to like there. And I guess it depends on what you're looking for in the draft in terms of size. This kid's a big, powerful kid. Maybe lacks a little consistency to do what I'm about to say, but when he goes to the net, he's really, really tough to handle. He's a big, strong kid. He's got a good shot. And like a lot of 17-year-old kids, their consistency level is sometimes in question. But he's the way I described the two of them, because I think it's back and forth all season long between Barbashev and Ehlers, I think Ehlers has a lot more soft skill. And what I mean by that, he can make the soft plays, fading away, avoiding contact and hitting the wide guy. Barbashev has more hard skill. He takes the puck to the net, drives the net, shoots the puck hard, and if he learns the consistency part of it, he could be a big-time player.
You know, Grant, you look at a lot of the names on the list, especially at least the forwards for sure. It seems like a smaller, you know, size-wise group than maybe in past years.
Yeah, well, we're coming off a wonderful year for the Quebec League. Last year was just a terrific year in terms of the number of high-end players. I don't think there's that quality this year. And you know what? There is a small group of players there. But you know, NHL teams will be looking for, if they're small, they have to be dynamic rather. Mm-hmm. I don't think the days of shying away from guys because they're small, I think that's behind us. If they're dynamic, if they have a dimension to them, then I think teams are certainly willing to move forward with them. The Brandon Gallaghers and the Marty St. Louis of the world are obviously important players for the respective teams, but there seems to be a lot of smaller players for sure.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Grant Saunier. Grant is the general manager of the Charlottetown Islanders of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. We're previewing the QMJHL as part of our NHL draft preview upcoming at the end of the month in Philadelphia. Grant, we mentioned that we talk about players that you're very familiar with. One of them is Mason McDonald. He's a goaltender for your Charlottetown Islanders. He's the second-ranked North American goaltender based on NHL Central Scouting. You know, what are the best attributes that Mason brings in the goal? Because the QMJHL has long been a hotbed of NHL goaltenders, of course.
Well, right off the bat is size, obviously. He's a big kid. He's pushing 6'3". You know, he was part of it was a two separate deals, but I never would have moved Antoine Bibeault if I wasn't able to acquire Mason McDonald. And everyone that watches junior hockey saw what Antoine Bibeault did for Val-d'Or. But Mason is a big, tall kid. I've told a lot of NHL scouts, the thing I like about him the most is his compete level, not just in games but in practice. This kid really, really works hard. He really wants to be a player. He's mature beyond his age. He takes his craft very seriously. And, you know, this is a small thing with goaltending, but I think it's a really important thing. He can really catch the puck. And when you can catch the puck, you're not giving up rebounds. He can reach across his body, catch the puck. He's a talented athletic kid, and I think the sky's the limit with this kid. We're really, really happy to have him.
Grant, the next Charlottetown Islander top prospect heading into the 2014 draft that we want to talk to you about is Alexandre Goulet. He was the second leading scorer for you this year. He was on the QMJHL's all-rookie team in his first year with the Islanders, scored 26 goals. He's ranked 65th among North American skaters. What can you tell us? What are his best attributes as a hockey player? And maybe if there's an NHL player that you could compare him to.
Yeah, the Goo, we call him Goo. Goo's a really good kid. He got passed over in the Q draft his first year, and some kids wilt away. This kid got motivated. Very strong for his age. Really, really works out hard. So he's got a really good body in terms of his ability to win one-on-one battles. He's got quick feet, and he can really shoot the puck on the fly. We were ecstatic about him. He was part of a trade at the draft last year, and he was the last first-round pick in our draft. It's hard for me to pick a player to compare. I know who he wants to be. He says he wants to be a star. He's got four or five different names, and really that describes him best. I think he's a combination player. He comes from a really, really small town in Quebec and really came in with his eyes wide open, really didn't know what he was getting into, and he had a wonderful season for us.
Grant, you look at Craigslist, Craig Button, of course, TSN put together his list. The top 60 don't have any defensemen from the QMJHL, and a couple of names you'll see on some other lists are Daniel Walcott and Alexis Vanier. Are those, do you think, the two consensus top defensemen from the Q, and why is it such a, is it just one of those years where there's not a lot of defensemen coming out of the system here?
Yeah, I just think if you look at drafts, there's trends. Obviously, some years are much better in terms of depth. Some years there's lots of goaltenders. I don't think there's much to read into there. Walcott was a really, really big get for Joel Bouchard and the Blainville Armada. He came in, and he's a little bit older, but had a wonderful season. He really showed poise and controlled the play really well. Vanier got hurt in the Subway Series and had the bad shoulder, but at the up until that point was tearing it up. Yeah, I think he scored 15 goals, so he's I think they are probably the consensus two best D. And really what happens, I think, when we handicap drafts, I think, you know, you hear the names early on and people go out there. There'll be some surprises out of the queue this year, I think.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Grant Saunier. He's the general manager of the Charlottetown Islanders of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Grant, the guy who sort of had an up-and-down year is Vladimir... I'm going to mispronounce his last name here, but Vladimir Tkachev of the Moncton Wildcats.
We gave Drew that one on purpose.
Yeah. You know, small guy, 5'10", only about 145 pounds right now.
145 pounds.
That's, you know, I wasn't kidding when I said small guy. You know, but he's supposedly got just all the skill in the world. What can you tell us about him, and is he sort of a, you know, is there a boom and bust factor or risk with that player?
Well, I think with the passport there's a boom and bust a little bit, and I'm not taking anything away from the Russian players, but I think that will scare some people away. He's a wonderful, talented kid. He's got incredible hockey sense and really, really good soft skill. He and Barbashev played together on the line, and they were big time dangerous in our league. I think the size is, he's not a tiny player when you see him, and I think it's just one of those things. He's obviously got to grow and mature and get bigger. He'll have that opportunity like all kids. So his skill level is what's going to get him drafted. His ability to find people, he can really change the pace of game. He likes to slow it down and draw people into him and then make a big time play. So I think a team will take a chance on him. It reminds me a little bit of Kokolchev, who played in Windsor and drafted by Boston.
Grant, we're going to skip ahead a little bit here to the 2015 draft. Daniel Sprong led the Charlottetown Islanders in scoring this year, and he's considered to be a top prospect for the 2015 draft class. What makes him so special?
Well, he's internally driven. His internal engine is always on. This kid is as serious and dedicated an athlete as I've been around, certainly at the young age. He's got incredible hand skills in terms of individual puck skills, and he's already got a National Hockey League shot. This kid can absolutely fire the biscuit. No, I haven't seen anybody in a long time that wants to score more than this kid. Maybe that's the fault too. Sometimes his shot selection might be a little bit left for desire, but I can't tell you how excited we are. This kid is putting bums in the seats in Charlottetown. He's a wonderful player. He's worth the admission. And on projection, I think they've got it bang on. I think he's a top 10 pick next year.
Grant, final question. Obviously, you were a scout before, scout in the National Hockey League, before a general manager with Charlottetown. The game in the queue, it was criticized for many years in terms of being a little bit too open and not players not having to battle maybe as much as in the WHL or the OHL. Has the game changed in the QMJHL, and does it still have that stigma?
I mean, I don't subscribe to the stigma, to be honest with you guys. It's easy when you look at leagues, you say, oh, all the tough guys are in one league and all the good goaltenders in another league. I think hockey's hockey. I think far too often it's complicated. I think our league is different in terms of we've got a lot of small guys, a lot of skill, and with that sometimes there's a tendency to play less physical. But I watched the Memorial Cup closely with a couple of players we'd traded to Val d'Or, and I didn't see much difference in terms of the style. In fact, I thought it was a very competitive Memorial Cup, so I don't buy into the stigma, but you know what? Hockey's hockey. Coaches find a way. They're all masterful minds in terms of the way they try to win games. And one night it's a 1-3-3. The next night it's a 2-1-2. And no, our league is a really, really good league. And I'm really fortunate to be able to be a GM. And I'm excited about year two, as I mentioned earlier.
Grant Saunier is the general manager of the Charlottetown Islanders of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Grant, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys. I'm off to my tea time now. Thanks.
Enjoy the game, Grant. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Reinhart works his way in. What a move. Reinhart to the lone. Oh, a beautiful goal by Sam Reinhart. You won't see a prettier goal than that. So calm, so cool. Not lightning quick speed, but lightning quick hands for Sam Reinhart. No big celebration. I've done this once or twice before, and I'll probably do it another 20 times.
Somebody in the NHL hopes that Sam Reinhart's going to do that for their team for the next decade, at least. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Continuing our conversation about the upcoming NHL draft. End of the month in Philadelphia. We will be live in Philadelphia bringing you all the news from the draft floor as it gets underway Friday night, round one, and then rounds two through seven on Saturday. So keep it tuned here to TSN 1290 and, of course, IllegalCurve.com for all your latest NHL draft news. Sort of, you know, when you look at the top of the NHL draft for this coming year, there's sort of been the two names that have been bandied about, Sam Reinhart and Aaron Ekblad. Aaron Ekblad and Sam Reinhart. One, those are generally the consensus top two picks for this coming draft. You know, sort of a two-part question. One, the Florida Panthers hold the first overall pick for the draft. Do you expect them to hold on to that? Because there's a lot of chatter that they might be willing to trade that pick. It's certainly been in their history that they've traded the first overall pick before. Do you think that they hold on to that pick? And who do you think that they're going to choose between Reinhart and Ekblad?
Well, you got to throw in Sam Bennett as well. If you look at, and I know what you're talking about, Sam Bennett has kind of been the NHL Central Scouting top pick, but on Craigslist, we're going to have Craig Button on the show in about an hour. He has had Sam Bennett as the third-rated pick, Sam Bennett out of Kingston, which is Dougie Gilmore is the general manager of that team.
The Frontenacs.
Sam Bennett, someone who I haven't seen play that much. Aaron Ekblad, I've seen play quite a bit. Great defenseman, playing for, of course, the Mark Scheifele, Barry Colts in the OHL. Got great wheels, and if you watch the World Junior Tournament, he was pretty good.
He needs to get better skating, though.
We'll ask Craig Button about this too, Richie, and we know what the answer is going to be. This isn't a strong draft class. And if you look at previous years, 2011 was a lot stronger. Last year was a lot stronger. You had Seth Jones, everyone expecting him to go first or second overall, and he slipped. But this is not a strong draft class. It is very, very small as far as the forwards go. Richie mentioned that. We talked to Grant Saunier last segment about that. But it's not a very strong draft class. And you look at, and back to your question, I should say, about the Florida Panthers. And Dale Tallon, Richie, has come out and said that we're willing to shop the pick. And that isn't common. You don't hear that a lot. And especially in previous years, you guys remember back in the day, Steve Tambellini. He wasn't willing to entertain trading that pick.
He didn't entertain any trades this whole time there.
That's true. But you look at a general manager coming out and saying that he's willing to trade the pick. And if you're Dale Tallon, why not consider it, Richie? You've got Alexander Barkov in the system. You've got Nick Bjugstad in the system.
Yes.
You've got your goaltending situation is solidified now with Roberto Luongo. If someone offers you a roster-ready player for that first overall pick, knowing that these players are not there isn't a Nathan MacKinnon this year.
No, not even close.
There isn't a Sidney Crosby this year.
Yeah, no.
There isn't a Matt Duchene this year or a Tyler Seguin this year. This is a draft class, and these are experts that are saying this. It's not just us, that these are good players. These are definitely good players, and I actually think I like Aaron Ekblad the best out of those three players, out of Reinhart and Bennett. I like Ekblad.
Ekblad seems the most pro-ready.
But as we know, defensemen take longer to develop, and it's very rare. Even if you look at Seth Jones, who's come in as an 18-year-old with Nashville, and sure, he's played with Shea Weber and all that. He's had his struggles. It's not guaranteed that Aaron Ekblad is going to come in. So you'd have to think that right now Bennett or Reinhart would probably be the favorite, because these are all rankings. This is not how they expect the draft to go. This is what they're basing their own analysis on. So this is a draft where I think also you have teams like the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers, who, even though they need to stockpile draft picks, in a draft where you're not sure really if you're going to take someone who's ranked third or even sixth overall, I think you are going to see more high picks moved. We saw the sixth overall pick moved last year, Richie. New Jersey Devils moved their pick to get Bo Horvat. Was that eighth?
Yeah, I think it was seventh. That was eighth. Eighth, yeah.
So I think you're going to to answer your question in a long-winded way, Drew, I do think you are going to see a top pick moved. And I haven't said that in previous years. I think it is because there isn't really a consensus, even not only number one pick, there just isn't it isn't a strong draft.
If you're the Avs last year, why are you trading the pick? You don't want to trade another franchise player. If you're the Panthers this year, I mean, people say, oh, you don't draft for need, but I don't buy that. Everybody likes to just say the cliche stuff. If you're the Florida Panthers and you don't have any centers, you're going to draft a center.
Sure.
As he mentions, Barkov last year and then Bukestad from drafted before that, and I thought he really came on the second half of last year. Barkov obviously had the injuries, but certainly showed some glimpses of a very talented player, and he ought to be if he's drafted ahead of guys like Seth Jones. Do they need a center? And if they don't need a center, maybe and Bennett, Reinhardt, whatever you're going to do, maybe if you don't need a center, that doesn't mean you're not going to trade just because you don't need one. But it means you would probably entertain one. And you look at it and you say, okay, what about defense? Because you mentioned Ekblad. Well, Ekblad sounds to be a similar player to Eric Gudbrandsson, although I'm not a big Eric Gudbrandsson fan, so I'll admit that off the top. But similar kind of guy, and are they worried? Because he's not going to be the fastest guy in the world. He's not going to put up 70 points. You're not drafting Drew Doughty here. So does he make you better? I mean, the NHL-ready stuff's fine and dandy, but they want to know he's going to be better in 4 years, not next year. They don't care about that. So you hear rumors about them talking about trading the pick. Like the main rumors right now surrounding the Florida Panthers are that they trade the pick, get an NHL young NHL player, and then get a pick later in the top 10.
Yep.
Because apparently they really like William Nylander.
Yep.
Michael Nylander, sorry, yep. Nylander. William Nylander, which is Michael Nylander's son.
Yep, they played together this year.
So they think they can get some kind of a skill. They think basically this. You'll hear people say this is a top 6, 7, 8 heavy draft. Mm-hmm. Right after the Jets pick, most people say that's kind of where that drop-off is, okay? But that's kind of the way it is. So if you see maybe them trade, the Panthers trade from 1 to 8, they might think there's still another guy there that they like that warrants the pick. But, getting back to who I think, if they trade the pick, Drew, I think based on the circumstances, they do trade the pick. I think Florida's going to trade the pick. I don't think it has that much value. And I think it's going to make for a more interesting draft. I think there's going to be a lot of action, trades of roster players in the National Hockey League and draft picks. And when you have a draft that's not deep, what you have is, in my opinion, when you have a draft that's not deep, generally when the draft is deep, that means there's a ton of talented players and they slot in pretty well. When it's not deep, you have varying levels of talent.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Exactly. So I think, somebody's 5 might be somebody's 10. And usually see that second round after the first round. You might see that this year in the middle of the first round.
And Richie, you mentioned earlier the key to talking about whether these picks are going to be traded is that most teams are going to want a first round pick back.
Yeah.
And that's why you might not necessarily see a blockbuster in the same vein as a Corey Schneider for that pick, meaning a straight up player for a pick.
But a young player has to be.
Right. And so you might see a player who maybe has fallen out of favor with the team. And so you'll get a first round pick and then you'll take a flyer on a player to improve. Basically saying that if you don't necessarily want a player that bad, you're willing to drop down in the draft, mm-hmm. give a team, as Richie mentioned, if a team wants William Nylander, then Nylander, sorry, I said it wrong like Richie. I don't know why I'm saying that. Maybe it's because we're watching tennis here in the studio and I'm thinking of nylon or something.
What? That doesn't make any sense.
I have no idea what I'm talking about. But there could be that situation where you see picks moving up. I remember back in 2003, the Devils moved up to take Zach Parise. They traded their, I believe it was a lower first round pick. We'll have to check. And then another pick, I think, in the second round. But they traded up to get Zach Parise, and that turned out to be a good move. I think you'll see a lot of that in the first round. And that's just the way it is. It isn't a strong draft, and that doesn't mean that Sam Bennett and Aaron Ekblad and others, Leon Draisaitl, these players aren't, and others go on and on and on. There's lots of good prospects out there. It's just, as a whole, this draft class is not strong. Plus, you have a lot of teams right now that have been rebuilding for a long time. And they need to take the next step. I mean, Edmonton Oilers, are they going to use their pick at number 4?
You also have a top 7 or 8. That is a top 7 or 8. It appears to be that people can move within that top 7 or 8.
Sure. There's no big difference between number 3 and number 6, let's say, or number 4 and number 7. Anyways, it all gets underway 20 days from today, Friday, June the 27th in Philadelphia.
Last year there was you had Drouin, you had Jones, you had Barkov and McKinnon. You knew they were going top 4.
Right.
It's not like that this year.
It's going to be a crapshoot, as they like to say. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the changes made yesterday in Pittsburgh. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I'm very excited about it. It's a great opportunity. Excited about working with Sidney Crosby and Gino Malkin and all the talented players. This is a job that most GMs would like to have, and I was very lucky and very fortunate at this point in my career that I've been given this opportunity.
That's new Pittsburgh Penguins general manager Jim Rutherford meeting with the media yesterday in Pittsburgh. He obviously replaces the departed Ray Shiro, and in his first act as general manager, he dismissed Dan Bylsma from his role as head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air, like the expert that he is. Gentlemen, Jim Rutherford, he sort of had been tied to the Carolina organization for years upon years at this point in time.
20 years.
20 years, probably going back to their days in Hartford there. And yet, all of a sudden, he becomes the general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
I didn't see this coming.
Jason Botterill is named the associate general manager.
Yep.
And then
Billy Guerin
and Tom Fitzgerald are the new assistant general managers. So you have a general manager, an associate general manager, and two assistant general managers.
What a mess.
Which led me to make the comment that the Pittsburgh Penguins now have more people with general manager in the title than they do bona fide third and fourth line NHL players.
This is true.
Richie's for sure the general manager of Illegal Curve, and we don't get assistant titles.
I just don't understand what they're doing there. What are they doing?
Well, Richie, what's interesting about the Jim Rutherford being hired, and then you're hearing
didn't he retire?
And then you're exactly.
Did Jim Rutherford retire?
Not only was there a situation where it was assumed he was stepping aside for Ron Francis, who is the new GM of the Carolina Hurricanes. Pardon me. There's also this issue that he apparently wanted a 5-year contract, and then they were asking him, is he going to step aside in 2 years for Jason Botterill? It's a very odd situation.
Jason Botterill's not ready now?
It's very odd, not because ready? We heard Pierre Maguire was also in the conversation.
I don't believe that for the record.
Apparently, he was offered the job, and they were arguing over a contract.
No, he was being interviewed.
I've heard
you don't
that.
Want to believe that. But
I have trouble believing that.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between you don't believe it and you don't want to. Yeah.
Fair enough.
But Pierre Maguire has ties to Mario Lemieux. He has ties to the Pittsburgh Penguins organization, guys. He was a former assistant coach with the Pittsburgh Penguins in the early 90s. So, I mean, he has ties to the Penguins, and we know that he has been an individual who has considered or wants to be a general manager in the NHL. But Richie, back to Jim Rutherford and Jason Botterill, the guy that I feel bad for is Dan Bylsma, who sits there for 3 weeks
right
after Ray Shiro is let go, and we talked to Mike Colligan, our good friend who's coming on next segment. Is Dan Bylsma a lame duck? And he said yes, and we knew this was coming. And for me, the guy that really to me is the unfortunate aspect of this is that Dan Bylsma sits there for 3 weeks and watches the playoffs.
Yeah, so long as he gets a job, it's fine. But yeah, I don't like the way it was handled. I completely agree with you.
Yeah, and apparently Florida is currently interviewing him and wants to bring Bylsma in to Florida, Dale Talon. But I agree with what you're saying, Richie. Rutherford and Botterill, what's going on there? Is he just there for a little bit, transition Botterill in? What's going on?
Well, to your point, if Botterill's the associate general manager, and based on the understanding or how you analyze the situation, Jim Rutherford's only going to be there for a couple of years, and then Botterill will become the full-fledged general manager.
Yep. Wow.
How much more experience does he need? He's been there for how many years now? He's been in front offices in the NHL for how many years now that if he's ready to be the general manager, I don't think two more years as an associate general manager is going to make a difference.
I have no clue what they're doing there. I just don't understand. Didn't Jim Rutherford retire?
Well, he retired in Carolina, we all thought it was
due respect to Jim Rutherford for obviously winning the Stanley Cup in 2007, it was,
six.
Right?
Yep.
Six, sorry.
Yep.
Over Edmonton, and he had the cup appearance in 2002. His teams were always very up and down, very good or very poor. Excuse me. But did anybody see the roster that came to Winnipeg last year? Did anybody see the Carolina Hurricanes roster?
A lot of guys overpaid and underperforming on that roster.
Yeah, and there weren't 10 NHL players on that team. There weren't 10 NHL players.
The fact they beat the Jets is for another day.
That's
in time.
Another issue. I forget that. Drew, Jim Rutherford in this, I don't understand this at all. I don't know what the plan is. I'm assuming when I say that there is a plan, and I think that might be a baseless assumption. I don't know why you have four guys now in the front office. How many more guys are making decisions in these offices? Like, how many more people? I mean, you got Sidney Crosby and you got Evgeny Malkin, and you're on a slippery slope to wasting the prime careers of two of the best players you'll ever see. Slippery slope. Because, who knows what happens with these two guys? You want to go through their prime of their career and lose in the second, first round? Jimmy Rutherford is going to come in here now, and it's a great job in the sense that the talent level is a great job. But the way that this hiring was handled leads me to believe this isn't a great job. Jason Botterill wanted to be the GM. I believe, we'll ask Mike Collingham, but I believe he's under contract. So he doesn't have a choice for associate GM or not, really.
Unless they're going to fire him.
Right.
Unless they're going to fire him, and they're not going to. That's what I'm saying. He doesn't have a choice. So he quits, gets rid of guaranteed money. I'm assuming he'd get hired on somewhere else, but you never know. And it's already later in the offseason now. I know the finals are still going on. So he's working with the guy for the job he wanted. That certainly has happened before. Then you have Billy Guerin and Tom Fitzgerald. I mean, I understand the idea of like the former GM, the kind of guy who's more of a numbers guy in Botterill. I know he played as well. Numbers guy. Then you have Tom Fitzgerald and Billy Guerin. I understand, what you're trying to do there. But there's too many chefs in the kitchen as far as I'm concerned. And there's no plan. Were you going to hire Pierre Maguire? Did you want to hire Pat Breeson? What did you want to do? How far down the list were you? It demonstrates to me a lack of organization for Ron Burkle and Mario Lemieux. And I'm not sure how involved they are in this whole thing. If it's Morehouse, Dave Morehouse the president, I don't know. But that is not for a job for a team that comes with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. Forget the rest. Forget James Neal, Letang, Fleury, all that stuff. Those two guys. That should have been a job that they were pushing people away for.
Yep.
And in this case, it seemed like they almost couldn't give it away.
The question that we have to ask when we have Mike Colligan on in about 5 minutes is, why not just go to Jason Botterill? And that seemed to be the logical step after letting Raishiro go. For a team that has struggled to get to the next level, Richie, they haven't won a lot of playoff rounds. Struggling against the Islanders, struggling against the Columbus Blue Jackets, not getting past the New York Rangers in the second round.
When you're up 3-1.
The question has to be, Jason Botterill, who has been discussed time and time again as being a future GM for at least 4 or 5 years. Remember Jason Botterill, brother of Jennifer Botterill, played in the juniors.
He's a Winnipeg
played
dad. NHL, yeah.
Played from Winnipeg. Dad is a sports psychology professor at UW, Cal Botterill. For those who don't know who Jason Botterill is.
Flames draft pick?
I think
Oilers.
Oilers?
The Stars or Oilers, I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, and he went and got his master's after his hockey career ended, and he's been, as Richie mentioned, he's been working on the contract side, if you want to call it capologist.
That was some powerful words you just had.
Timmy's just making sure Drew's awake here.
I'm getting a little old. It's time for my morning nap.
Around 10:15, Drew has to take his middle of the morning nap, Richie. So, no, but I mean, the question has to be, when Jason Botterill is kind of being groomed, so to speak, to be the next general manager, why bring in, as Richie mentioned, Jim Rutherford, who for all intents and purposes is kind of going into early retirement? I mean, Jim Rutherford isn't a spring chicken.
65 years old.
So it's not like this is his first.
I don't care about his age as so much as the idea that he was going to retire.
Well, that's why. I mean, it seemed quite amicable in Carolina. You know, Jim Rutherford's going to move on to a non-hockey related role with the organization.
I don't think it was that amicable, Drew. I don't think he was. I'd say retirement kind of time.
You think he was forced upstairs?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was his time to move on.
Well, obviously, it looks like he still wants to run the show, right?
There you go.
I mean, appearances at the time, I thought maybe it was more amicable than
Why would he want to do that job and not be the GM?
Well, I don't know. Less pressure. You go work as an ambassador for the club and you make...
You're a GM in the National Hockey League, Drew. You're competitive. You don't want to be an ambassador.
I know. I'm just saying. Maybe, most people thought that it was more amicable. How about that?
Yeah, maybe. I'll give you that.
Okay.
But when you're a GM, then you get moved to a different role. It's usually not of your own volition.
I think the real interesting question here is, how happy is Jason Botterill? If he's happy at all, or is this a guy who's, he's under contract and he'd rather have a bird in the hand is worth more than two in the bush.
Right.
He's got a contract. He's going to take that contract. But, I mean, if you're Botterill, I can't believe that you're saying, yeah, this is, you know, this is a great situation for me. Boy, do I love it. But again, I guess the pressure is sort of off of him. The spotlight's not on him in this instance.
Well, and the question is, what's Jimmy Rutherford going to do here also, you know, in terms of how he builds a team?
Trade for Jordan Staal again?
Yeah, you know, Drew, the trade for Jordan Staal, I've seen him. The Penguins, you know, kind of quote-unquote ripped him off in a few trades. And I think the Penguins came out on the winning end of those trades. You know, UC Jokinen one obviously is one that's referenced as well. I mean, he was on waivers before, so they picked up his contract. Yep. And obviously, so eating his contract for Carolina. But a lot of teams could have picked him up on waivers. So if they were that genius, you know, they were that smart.
Yeah, they would have
eaten the $900,000 and taken the player because they thought he was that valuable.
Well, Richie, what you're talking about, though, so sorry to jump in here, but what you're talking about is you're talking about a Pittsburgh Penguins team that has holes in it. There's issues in goal with Marc-Andre Fleury because his contract is expiring.
Carolina's team's always had issues. I mean, Cam Ward kind of solidified it, but for years he had issues in goal in Carolina.
Yeah, and there's the issues, even though Wilkes-Barre, as we saw, you know, has developed nicely and is pushing players into the NHL. You look at Magna and Gibbons and Bennett, all these guys. They have a good AHL system. It's not the best young prospects in the NHL. They have some D prospects. But you're talking about how are you going to address, as Richie mentioned, this is a team with two of the best players in the world. And there's a window, and it's not as big as you think it is. Crosby and Malkin, they're in their late 20s now. It's not going to be, you're not going to have these guys playing at their prime for the next 10 years. So it's all about adding the depth pieces. That's what he's got to do. Yeah. He's got to find a guy to play on the wing with Crosby and Kunitz if it's not Dupuis. And if it's not that line, he needs to find a better player to play on the second line wing. They were basically patching in guys in the playoffs and it wasn't working out. So he has a lot of work to do as far as bringing in personnel and making this team better. This isn't a team that's happy to make it to the second round of the playoffs.
He also needs to hire a head coach now.
Well, yeah, not to mention that.
And, I mean, I don't even know where to begin with options for the head coach in Pittsburgh.
If you look at, you know, his past relationships, it's with Paul Maurice, who's here now,
yeah,
and it's with Peter Laviolette, who's in Nashville now, and Kirk Muller, but they just got rid of him. So, I mean, I don't think, and he's already in St. Louis, so I'm sure, assuming he can get a job, you know, can be let go to be a head coach. The point is, the guys he's been associated with in his past have already been hired. Now, maybe Ulf Samuelsson, if there's a connection there, although apparently Ron Francis is very interested in him. Who knows? But yes, Drew, I mean, that does raise some questions in terms of who's going to be the coach, what kind of coach do they want, who's making that call? Is Rutherford making that call, or is the president of ownership making that call?
And you've got Jacques Martin and Tony Granato, the assistants under Bylsma.
Don't think either of them would be good candidates.
But they, not even as a head coach, but will they even be kept?
Fair enough.
By the head coach coming in, right? Jacques Martin, who, you know, didn't get a lot of credit for what he did with a guy like Matt Niskanen, made him a lot better of a defenseman, worked primarily with the defenseman. Did they want him as a head coach?
Apparently, he got an interview in Carolina this past week.
So there's a lot of question marks here, because the only thing we do know is that I think we'd all agree is that Dan Bylsma isn't going to be out of a job long.
I think we would agree with that. And just when we think we have the answers on the Pittsburgh Penguins, they go and they change the questions on us. Let's head to break. When we come back, Mike Colligan, he covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. He's going to join us and we'll talk more about the goings-on in Pittsburgh. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from thehockeywriters.com. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins, Mike Colligan. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Good morning.
Mike obviously brought you on to talk about the Penguins' moves that they made earlier this past week, hiring Jim Rutherford, hiring about 44 other associate general managers, and firing Dan Bylsma. First question about the hiring of Jim Rutherford. When did he enter the picture for this job? Because most everybody sort of thought he had just retired to Carolina, where he was going to be somewhere above Ron Francis in the hierarchy of the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, Drew, I think your confusion is widespread, even in Pittsburgh and those close to the situation, and even in the decision-making process. I just get a sense that this wasn't as clean as maybe they made it out to be. They said that they had 30 candidates for the job. I was hearing about midway through the process that there wasn't quite the interest that they expected, and I think that's where a guy like Jim Rutherford may have come into the picture. I know the Penguins reached out to him a little over a week ago and gauged his situation and just tried to see if he was even available, and that tells me that they were looking outside the box, trying to get a few more names in the mix. And obviously things came together pretty quickly if within a week they were able to get Rutherford in there, agree with him on kind of the direction of the team and where things would go, get him signed, and then have that press conference yesterday to announce him as new general manager.
Mike, we were talking about this before we had you on here about the Pittsburgh Penguins firing of Dan Bylsma and then hiring Jim Rutherford. Why Jim Rutherford over, say, Jason Botterill, who's been groomed as the next general manager of this team?
Eddie, my question would be, why Jim Rutherford over Ray Shiro? I think Shiro had done a pretty good job. He didn't win multiple Stanley Cups as maybe the ownership expected to, but I agree. When you're talking about a team, if you're supposedly looking to go in a different direction, you had some talented younger guys, and not only Botterill, but Julian Brisebois out of Tampa Bay, Paul Fenton, who seems to be on the verge of every general manager job that's out there, and even Pierre Maguire. If I had to say why Rutherford, I think experience is certainly the factor. When you look at that list that I just mentioned, there's zero GM experience amongst that group, whereas Rutherford, obviously, on the other end of the scale with 20 years in Carolina and at age 65, has certainly a wealth of experience to really tap into. And I think when I look at his time in Carolina, there were some ownership issues there and budgetary constraints, but he was a guy that I thought did a pretty good job tearing down that team and rebuilding it pretty efficiently. You know, they won a Stanley Cup, but they were back and forth from bottom of the league to top of the league pretty quickly, and perhaps the Penguins are looking at what he's able to do, at least in the short term, as far as reshaping this franchise, because it's a team that's pretty close to a Stanley Cup. They don't need a full rebuild, but they need some changes, and they need it quickly if they want to compete for a cup next year.
Mike, was Pierre Maguire offered this job before Rutherford eventually took it?
I don't know if he was officially offered the job, but I know that, you know, I mentioned this 3-week timeline, and Pierre Maguire was contacted the next morning after Ray Shearer was fired. So that tells me he was immediately on their list and one of their top candidates. I know he had 2 in-person interviews, and over the last week was in contact with the team quite a bit, talking about terms and details. I don't know if they ever got to a point where they offered him the job, or it was one for him to turn down or disagree, but there certainly was mutual interest there, to the point where I think Pierre Maguire really thought he had a legitimate chance. And that's where I've heard a lot of mixed messages there, is I don't get the sense that the Penguins decision-making group, made up of co-owners Mario Lemieux and Ron Burkle, their CEO David Morehouse, and also their COO and Travis Williams, I just don't get the sense that that group was on the same page throughout this process. And that perhaps is why we heard a lot of disagreeing info kind of leak out there over the last 3 weeks.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Mike Colligan. Mike covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. Mike, earlier in one of your answers, you mentioned Jason Botterill, and he's sort of, you know, he's been promoted, I guess, to the associate general manager's role with the Penguins. A lot of people thought that he might have been in line to actually take the headman job and become the general manager of the Penguins. You know, how does he play into this whole situation? How does his contract status play into this whole situation?
Well, Botterill's a Winnipeg guy, and so some local listeners may be familiar with him, but yeah, he's one of the rising stars in the NHL. Was in the running for the Vancouver and Buffalo GM jobs and didn't get that, and so certainly was a strong candidate in this process as well. He was promoted to associate GM, so that was symbolically above assistant GM, which he was 2 days ago. Not too sure what that means, and I get the sense that he really doesn't know what that means at this point. And maybe we have to give time for Jim Rutherford to really come in and set some structure on what they did. They also promoted Tom Fitzgerald and Bill Guerin to assistant GM. So to me, the problem with that structure is now you've got a lot of cooks in the kitchen under Jim Rutherford there. And there were also public comments made by Rutherford and the CEO yesterday that they see in that group of three the potential for two or all three of them to be GMs. And so you're creating a culture where now you've got a lot of competitive, hungry guys that are looking to be that next GM. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe competition breeds successful results. But I just think that's asking a lot when you've got guys that are a little confused as to how this process played out, now expected to more or less compete for that role in 2 or 3 years when Rutherford moves on.
Mike, we have one last question about Jim Rutherford for you, and then we'll get to Dan Bylsma here. We heard talk at the press conference, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not sure if they announced how many years Jim Rutherford's contract is for, but there was talk of does he want to be here for longer than 2 or 3 years, and he said he expects to be here for 2 years, a couple of years. Do you agree with that?
I think so. Yeah. If you're asking whether it'd be shorter or longer, I think it's tough to get much shorter than 2 years, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's there for one. I mean, I think this is a situation where they set the bar extremely high when they said that the conference finals and the second round of the playoffs was not good enough. And, Rutherford, with his age, I can't imagine him going beyond 2 or 3 years, but I think the way it's currently structured, the succession plan is in place for one of those three younger guys to move into this GM role over the long term. But that's if they win. And if this group does not win and does not reach that high bar that ownership has now set, I wouldn't be surprised if they go a very, very different direction and perhaps go for bigger names and make significant moves to go in that direction. So I think there's a lot of things in flux, and I would say there's actually more questions than answers at this point in the Penguins process.
Mike, did Jim Rutherford fire Bylsma? Like, was he hired on the basis that Bylsma would be fired, or was it a call that came from above, always was going to come from above, and was just kind of disrespecting Dan Bylsma?
I would lean towards the latter. Technically, Rutherford came in and pulled the final trigger on Dan Bylsma, but when David Morehouse, CEO, came out 3 weeks ago and said that the reason that they held on to Bylsma is they wanted the new GM to have the opportunity to come in, do a full evaluation as to what they had and what they needed, and then make the right decision. Rutherford yesterday came out and maybe unintentionally said that no, he really didn't have that opportunity to do that. He went on what ownership and the management told him to do, and really never got a chance to get to know Bylsma. So I think in that sense, I think you're right, that's a little unfair to a guy. And that was the hunch and the rumor all along, was that this was a decision made long, long ago that Dan Bylsma would be moving on. I think one of the problems is going to be that Jim Rutherford is an extremely honest guy, and that works in Carolina, where you maybe only have one or two media members, in front of the team, and you can really have good relationships. But when you get into some of these bigger markets, as you guys know, there's a lot of managing the message that's out there. And the problem is, if Rutherford's not on the same page with a lot of these stories that have been built up over the months and years here with this Pittsburgh organization, I think he could get in some problems from a media perspective.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Mike Colligan, who covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. Mike, Dan Bylsma obviously is a well-regarded head coach, and you're going to have pretty much a lot of opportunities for him to choose from if he wants to coach in this coming season. Where do you think he ends up, if anywhere, this year?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, Drew. He's going to have opportunities, and if it's not this year, I think he can handpick some opportunities next year when teams maybe have the flexibility to make a move on their coaches, or even mid-season if a team gets off to a slow start, they might be able to move them out, knowing that Bylsma is a really significant candidate just waiting out there. Bylsma also signed a 2-year extension last year that he's never got a chance to even start, so he's getting paid $2 million a year to really wait for that opportunity. If I had to say in the short term where he goes, I think Florida makes a lot of sense. Florida looking to make a significant splash in free agency, that tells me they'd be willing to pay some money for Bylsma as well to get him down down there. And I think with his positive attitude and approach, I think that's exactly what you need for that franchise. You need to turn that team around, and you can get into some bad habits and just really down on yourselves when you have a number of losing seasons in a row as they've had. I think a guy like Bylsma is exactly what you need to kind of get younger players on board with the right attitude and take that franchise in the right direction.
Mike, who do you think is going to end up coaching the Pens?
That's a big question right now. Rutherford said he had a very short list, and if you look back at what he did in Carolina, he was a guy that tended to always go with guys that he knew, and he went a little out of the way with a gut feel and Kirk Muller that backfired on him. So I think, if anything, he's probably going to stick with guys that he knows. You know, there's a few Carolina names that you could think of that, you know, would come up in that situation, but he's a guy that, it's tough to predict. I think if anything, Jacques Martin's an option. If he would stick around with the Penguins, he's an associate coach right now that's in limbo, but I could see him having a situation where he's there for a year, and then the Penguins go for a bigger name like Mike Babcock, because I think that's ultimately the end goal for this team that wants to make a big splash. I think they're really going to keep going harder after Babcock. And in that vein, I wouldn't be surprised if the Penguins try to get him sooner than later. We all know pretty well about that situation in Detroit where Babcock has 1 year left on his contract and can't seem to come to an agreement yet. I wouldn't be surprised if the Penguins try to come to some sort of agreement to get Babcock out of there a year early and see if they can bring him in, obviously that being the big prize for the Penguins.
Mike, I think you'd agree that we expect the Penguins to make some more moves before the draft, after the draft, heading into the summer and free agency. But now that the Penguins have fired Ray Shiro and Dan Bylsma, is this team better off than it was at season's end?
That's a good question. You know, you guys have had me on here plenty of times during the Shiro regime, and I was always pretty positive about that. And I think, you know, he was a guy that really operated the right way, treated people well, and I think the things that he put in place for the Penguins franchise are things that will pay off for Jim Rutherford right now. And if you can sense from today, I'm a little confused as to where this organization goes. I don't think they're in a better place than they were a month ago when Ray Shiro was a general manager and even Dan Bylsma as head coach. But we'll see what happens. And if they are looking to kind of make a chess move here to set themselves up for something bigger and better, whether it's this year or a couple of years down the road, then maybe we've got to wait until that point. But I think it puts them in a tough situation with the draft in a couple of weeks and free agency coming up. That's asking a lot for Jim Rutherford to come in and really do an appropriate evaluation for a team that I think is in a pretty significant offseason right now as far as where they go for the future and how they reshape that roster going forward.
Mike Colligan covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. He's a frequent guest on this show. Mike, thanks very much for doing this morning.
Sure thing, guys.
Take care, Mike. We'll talk to you soon. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.